General Rolando Rodriguez of the Movimiento de Izquierda Revolucionaria had parked his Great People's Combat Wagon in front of the darkened Refair office. The PCW was an 88 Ford station wagon he'd borrowed from his brother-in-law, Alberto, a Puerto Rican exile living here in Miami.
The window is fogging up again. Wipe it off.
Yes, General.
After the disaster at MIR headquarters back in San Juan earlier in the week, Rodriguez had been bumped from corporal to general. It was a battlefield promotion he was afraid he'd never live to enjoy. After his multiple failures to eliminate the man who had decimated MIR's ranks, he had but one chance left to succeed. Otherwise, she would have a revenge against Rodriguez himself.
Do you really think the men we are looking for are inside, sir?
I'm sure of it. I have a soldier's instinct for such things. Also, I have an excellent source for information. It comes from the highest possible source.
Of course, General.
Their numbers were far fewer now. The men from the first attacks in New York and Boston were dead. The later assault near Refair headquarters on Mott Street had resulted in the first MIA soldier in the history of the revolutionary organization. After that soldier was gone, there weren't many left. Which was why the general himself had been forced to lead the last of his troops on this final campaign. Rodriguez checked his watch. They should be in place by now. If the men he was after showed themselves here, and according to the information she had supplied, they would, the brave soldiers of MIR would be ready for them.
Damn.
The window had fogged up again. Grabbing the torn Jennifer Lopez t-shirt, General Rodriguez wiped himself a squeaky tactical display field on the front windshield of Detroit's finest People's Combat Wagon.
He's still there?
Yeah, he's wiping off the window again.
Inside the Miami Refair office, the three men were piled against the shadow-drenched wall. Thanks to Holy Polly, they'd already gotten the word out of New Orleans. With another three Scubizi soldiers dead, the Gabinetto brothers were taking no chances. The Gabinettos were hulking brutes with broad shoulders and massive fists. Unlike their fellow paisans, there were no nicknames for the four sons of Francesca Gabinetto. A distinctive sobriquet for any of them would have been redundant. To say Gabinetto was to say it all.
You think he's waiting for this guy?
As he spoke, he nodded across the room. A body lay on the floor near the open door to the rear storage room. Mark Howard's hands had been tied clumsily behind his back. Dried blood darkened a spot on his light brown hair. His chest moved up and down rhythmically under his blue sweatshirt. He was unconscious, but alive.
Don't matter. I figured if that was the guy what's been whacking everybody, we'd give him to Don Scubisi for a parole present. Now there's two of them. It's too complicated. We'll just kill them both.
He's almost there.
The other two behemoths peeked outside. A huge figure was sneaking up on the parked station wagon from behind. They watched in satisfaction as Mario, their youngest brother, crept up to the driver's door.
We whack him, then this guy on the floor over here, and maybe we can finally get out of here.
Outside, their brother had reached the car door. A hand as big as a small snow shovel reached for the handle. With a wrench, he tore the door open, swinging up the gun he held in his other massive hand. Through the picture window, the three waiting Gabinettos heard a muffled pop. Their brother was still standing at the car's open door as Fabio turned to the others.
Okay, one of you guys aerate Sleeping Beauty over there. I'll get on the phone with Holy Polly and tell him it's done.
Oh, Mario!
What happened?
Oh my God!
Oh, they popped Mario!
As he spoke, a figure emerged from the car. The man had pulled on a ski mask. As he stepped over the lifeless body of the youngest Gabinetto, they could see the rifle in the masked man's hands.
Damn it, Ma's gonna kill me!
What's this guy think he's doing?
The armed man was heading for the front of the office. Fabio was about to order his brothers to shoot through the window when he noticed another figure slip from the shadows behind the car. This one was followed by four, no, five more. All carried rifles braced against their chests. Each man wore a ski mask and jungle camouflage.
I thought these guys didn't use guns.
Shut up!
When the shooting began an instant later, the suddenness startled the three crouching men. Bullets chewed the wood around the doorknob. Even as the hot lead screamed into the office, a booted foot kicked the door open. A masked commando rolled into the room, rifle up and searching for targets. Fabio laid him out with a single shot to the forehead. The dead man was falling to his knees as the next wave of soldiers leaped through the open door. The heavily armed men dove behind desks and chairs, all the while shooting at the Gabinetos. Returning fire, Fabio and his brothers took cover behind a row of filing cabinets. More shooting echoed from the rear storeroom. Fabio heard the sound of another door being kicked in.
There's more coming in the back!
As he fired at the shadowy figures, Fabio suddenly thought they might be coming to collect the guy he and his brothers had knocked out. He swung his gun toward the back of the office, ready to plant a few rounds into the unconscious man. His eyes went wide. The guy was gone. The open storeroom door was only a few feet from where they dumped him.
Damn it! I told you we should have whacked that guy, Emilio!
With an angry scowl, he resumed firing at the mysterious masked men. Mark Howard had come around more than an hour earlier. Feigning unconsciousness, he'd watched the activity in the office through slivered eyes. His shocking salvation came when the door to the office was kicked open amid a barrage of bullets. Mark seized his chance. Hands still tied behind his back, he had crawled desperately on toes and knees into a smaller office next to the storeroom.
Good God.
He was cornered. He had worked his hands free, but the only door was the one he'd just come through. There were no windows. As his eyes darted around the room, Mark saw a familiar shape lying on a chair. His heart knotted at the sight of his gun.
Oh, yes!
He pounced on the weapon, tearing at the holster's Velcro straps. A soldier in the hallway heard the sound. The man twisted around the corner just as Mark lifted his gun. With a look of fierce triumph, Mark squeezed the trigger. It didn't budge.
No, it's the safety! Where's the damn safety?
And as he twisted and shook the weapon in helpless frustration, the masked man who had just entered the small room raised his own gun, ready to fire. Mark's world slowed to a crawl, then stopped completely. In a hail of plaster dust, the upended body of Emilio Gabinetto soared through the wall. Before the gunman could fire, the flying Gabinetto had slammed into him with the force of a speeding freight train. A persistent noise, like that of snapping kindling, rose to his ears. Somehow, Mark instinctively knew he was listening to the sound of snapping bones. In spite of the fear he felt, Mark peeked through the jagged opening Emilio Gabinetto had formed. He saw a flash of something small and red flying toward a cowering Genio Gabinetto. Before the gangster could shoot, the red dervish was upon him. Genio became airborne, soaring through the hole his brother had formed. The body pounded against the wall and bounced off, collapsing lifeless on the prone form of Mark Howard. Mark was trying to wiggle out from under the huge body when he heard an angry hiss of Spanish nearby.
Ahora tú eres un hombre muerto.
Twisting his head, Mark saw that another commando had entered the room from the back door. Even as the firefight was dying in the front office, the man strode toward the CIA analyst. Mark had dropped his gun in the fall. He made a frantic grab for it, even as he squirmed under the body. His fingertips had barely brushed the gun butt when the hard crush of a boot heel stomped on his wrist. Mark felt the sharp sting of snapping bone.
Remo, cover your eyes!
From his ankle view of the world, Mark saw a pair of plain black sandals materialize before his eyes. Then, the body of the commando collapsed in a heap, inches from Mark's nose.
What's wrong? Who's the shaken one laying under the fat one?
Do not look. Whatever it is writhing like a Pyongyang harlot beneath a behemoth.
Top guy's dead, little father.
Worse still. Stop that this instant. My young son does not need to see such depravity.
A face at once both cruel and curious peered at Mark Howard.
Hiya. Want me to get this dead guy off you?
I'd like that. Yes, please.
Mark felt a sudden, blessed lightness as the body of Genio Gabinetto was lifted off of him.
Okay, what's your story?
CIA.
Oh, the Keystone Cops of the spy world. Word of advice for the future, Nick Danger. Really bad form to get smothered under a big fat guy while you're doing that dippy spy stuff you people do.
Chun was standing beyond Remo. His wrinkled face offered Mark a look of disapproval. When Remo headed for the door of the outer office, the master of Shinanju spun after him, kimono hems swirling around his bony ankles.
Well, Mark, you found General Smith's force. Or did they find you?
Scooping up his gun in his good hand, he hustled out into the big room after them. Remo and Chun were walking over to the far corner. The way they moved, it was as if theirs was a single mind connected by a string of unspoken thought. As they strode past the door leading into the front office, a huge figure suddenly lunged in at them like a wounded bison. Fabio Gabinetto had been shot in one shoulder, yet he still lumbered forward. His arms were stretched out wide, ready to ensnare Remo in a crushing bear hug. Remo didn't even seem to notice. At the moment when Fabio's arms should have encircled his chest, he simply ducked out of the way. Fabio's forward momentum couldn't be slowed. As he thundered impotently past, Remo snagged him by the scruff of the neck. His legs continued pumping as he dangled in midair from Remo's outstretched arm.
Going somewhere?
Put that down.
Huh?
Remo looked over at Fabio as if just realizing he was there.
Oh.
Whipping the gangster around, Remo planted his head neck deep in the nearby wall. The body went slack, toes barely brushing the dirty floor. Chun was standing at the restroom door. He opened it with a simple hand slap. A man was hiding inside the small room. When he saw the two men framed in the doorway, his eyes grew wide inside his ski mask. Something flashed in his hands.
Gun!
Howard threw himself at the floor, aiming his own weapon between the two men. Fresh pain from his broken wrist shot up his arm. In the instant Mark winced, Chun's hand snapped down. The CIA agent's eyes opened just in time to see the old man's fiercely sharp fingernails sail through the commando's gun barrel. Mark watched in astonishment as a section of rifle clanked on the tile floor. It was joined by two others. Sitting on the toilet in the single stall room, the masked man suddenly found his hands grasping air.
Thanks for the warning. And if you want to make a bang noise when you point that thing at people, you might want to take the safety off.
Turning back to the commando, Remo pulled off the man's black mask. The terrified face of General Rolando Rodriguez cringed from his darting hands.
Okay, I've had it up to here with you nimrods trying to kill me six ways to Sunday. I want to know why you're after me, and I want to know now. Otherwise, you're going head first into that bowl, and I won't stop flushing until there's nothing left but a pair of really smelly Che Guevara boots.
She made me come after you. After what you did to MIR in Puerto Rico, you became a threat to her ambition.
These attacks had nothing to do with Refair?
No, she just told us where you would be. In Boston, we knew you would be coming soon, but at the places like this, we were told to wait. She did not know when you would arrive, only that you would come.
Okay, here's the $20,000 question. Who's she? The only one who knows about us is our boss, us, and...
It struck him like a bolt out of the blue.
Oh.
Remo turned to the master of Shinanju. There was a hint of a knowing look on the old man's otherwise inscrutable face.
She's your...
They were the only words he managed to get out before the hardened finger pierced his occipital lobe. All speech, thought, and life ended at the same time for the revolutionary leader. When Remo pulled his finger free, General Rolando Rodriguez toppled sideways into the wall of the toilet stall.
Let's go.
Behind them, Mark Howard had climbed back to his feet. He'd been listening to the commando's words with growing fascination, but when Remo and Chun swept toward him, the CIA man backed nervously against the wall. Chun breezed past him without even acknowledging his existence. Remo stopped before the young man.
Forget everything. It beats me having to kill you.
That was it. The hand lowered, and he was gone. Mark hugged his broken wrist as he tried to catch his breath. He'd done it. He had faced down the fear of his own destiny and had survived. Smith and his agents were irrelevant to his future, at least for now. Surprisingly, fate had brought him here to learn something else entirely. Something that went to the character of the man who had found him toiling in anonymity at the CIA. Remo called Smith from the plane.
You were right, Smitty. Those Puerto Rican terrorists are the ones who've been trying to kill me all along.
I know. The man you brought back here regained consciousness a few hours ago. I tried to call you during your flight from New Orleans to Miami, but the plane system was down.
The navigator probably shorted it out when he accidentally spilled his rum and coke. So did he tell you who's behind it?
Yes.
We're giving a pass to the other Refair offices. Joan and I are flying back to New York. We'll hit her first and then put this whole goose chase to bed.
No. No matter what the motivation was to involve us, Refair is still a danger. I've had no luck tracing Anselmo Scubisi's benefactor. Once you're finished here, I want you to go to the federal penitentiary in Missouri and find out from him who is behind this.
Okay.
And Remo, do not kill her.
Kind of figured that. But I'm looking forward to this inauguration like I've never looked forward to one before.
The heavy blue quilt Hello. Was pulled up to her neck.
Hola.
Lying alone in her big, Hello. Comfortable bed in New York's Hola. Westchester County, she was trying nice desperately to banish the vexing thoughts that had plagued her this past
it's
week.
Nice to meet you.
Though dawn was still a few hours away, the soft it's Spanish nice voice still droned incessantly in the background, just as it had for the past 12 months.
Buenas
Even
tardes.
At night, she'd been allowing the soft words
Good
to
afternoon.
Penetrate her brain.
Ah.
But though the faceless man had recited ceaselessly, day after day, week after week, she just wasn't getting it.
Learn Spanish just like the diplomats do. It's easy, fun, and fast. Ugh.
For some reason, the words just weren't sticking. There was no reason why she shouldn't be picking it up easier. After all, she was the most brilliant woman ever to set shoe to soil. Time, Newsweek, Eleanor Clift, and all the major networks had told her so for the past 8 years.
Stupid language. My first edict will be to make that filthy little island an English-only zone.
When a voice answered her from out of the night, she was stunned that it did not come from her tape player.
Does that include the name Puerto Rico, too? Because the only ones who really stand to benefit from that are the mapmakers.
Two men stood near the door. She recognized them at once.
You!
And everyone knows that the mapmakers are still sitting on the sacks of gold they made after Russia collapsed.
Madam?
In a flash, she shot up out of bed, planting her bare feet firmly on the ornate oriental rug that had been stolen from the White House map room. She ripped the nightstand tape player up and flung it at Remo's head. He plucked it from the air, carefully placing it to the floor. She threw a lamp at the master of Shinanju. The old man ducked to one side, and the lamp shattered against the wall.
I knew it was you! I only met you those couple of times, but as soon as that Spick Rodriguez mentioned those freaky wrists of yours, I knew it!
Yeah, well, if I had thighs like yours, lady, I wouldn't be commenting on anyone else's shortcomings.
I'm going to scream! My God!
Don't bother. The Secret Service has gone night-night for the time being.
What are you doing here? Don't tell me those MIR morons blew it in Miami!
Your soldiers have been vanquished by Shinanju, Your Majesty.
Sine what?
Shinanju.
Do you two know what you've done? You've delayed my ascension to the Puerto Rican throne! After the revolution, those greasy little wetbacks were gonna make me their queen! Now I'm gonna have to go out and find some more wrongly incarcerated revolutionaries for that worthless husband of mine to pardon within the next 24 hours!
Diving across the room, she grabbed for the phone on her dresser.
Ah!
A strong hand was already there, holding down the receiver. She looked up into Remo's hard face.
Couldn't you just be content being a nuisance in regular America and spare the protectorates?
Let me call!
The First Lady furiously pounded her balled fists against Remo's chest. As she continued to punch him, he noticed a pin lying on her dresser. It was the same one with the weird parentheses enclosing a circle design that all of his attackers had worn.
What the hell is this, anyway?
It is a symbol of female gender superiority. I was sick of you men with your phallocentric designs for everything, from flagpoles to obelisks. That's a symbol of sisterhood designed by a female.
Remo looked at the button again. For the first time, he realized what it was.
It's a woman's private parts.
When he showed the button to the master of Shinanju, the old man's eyes took on an appalled cast. Cheeks flushing, he covered his face with a billowing kimono sleeve.
Oh, put that smutty thing away.
It's nothing to get too worked up over. By the looks of it, the model was a robot.
It's conceptual.
Not if it looks like that, it ain't. Okay, Cruella de Vil, let's get this over with.
I will not be silenced! Everyone knew the Senate wasn't big enough to hold me! I'll be back!
Before then, remind me to buy stock in an earplug company.
Remo pinched a nerve on her shoulder. Mouth still twisted open, the First Lady went rigid, then limp. Remo grabbed her as she fell, dumping her into a Louis Tiffany chair that had been bought for the White House by Chester Arthur. He brought his lips close to her ear.
Hear and obey. You're gonna forget everything you know about Cure, Harold Smith, and the two men you've been trying to kill this past week. You're gonna forget all of this stuff forever, and you won't even be remotely interested in ever remembering. Do you understand?
Her
eyes closed. The First Lady nodded. Remo straightened. As he turned back to the master of Shinanju, a thought suddenly occurred to him. He leaned back over the First Lady.
Oh, and one more thing. From now on, your role model for womanhood will be June Cleaver. You will cook, clean, and bake cookies with a smile on your face and a song in your heart. And you won't even be remotely interested in TV cameras, public life, or inciting socialist rebellions. And you'll wear a frilly white apron wherever you go, even in the shower.
When he stood back up, Remo wore a satisfied expression.
America owes me big time.
Leaving the soon-to-be ex-First Lady snoring complacently in her stolen chair, happy visions of vacuum cleaners and bundt cakes dancing merrily in her head, the two masters of Shinanju slipped silently from the bedroom. In the pre-dawn light of a small Missouri airport, a surplus Bell AH-1 Cobra helicopter hummed to life. The drooping rotor blades grew rigid, slicing air with violent purpose. Behind it, three more helicopters growled awake. At the same time, from hangars draped in sheets of dying gloom, a stream of black vans rumbled forth, their occupants obscured by tinted windows. On the runways, pilots, in face-obscuring camouflage paint, checked instruments with swift efficiency. When all was ready, the first chopper lifted into the sickly gray sky. The second helicopter lifted off, then the third and fourth. They regrouped above the black trees. Like angry hornets leaving a nest, the fully armed helicopters swooped down across the gray tarmac, briefly joining the convoy of vans before soaring back up over the distant trees. On the ground, the vans vanished down the road, drawing the last shadows of night in their wake. And then all was silent. Don Anselmo Scubizi was burning the last of his Camara correspondence in the toilet of his solitary confinement cell when he heard the thunder. He checked his watch. 6 a.m. The first lonely booms grew in frequency and intensity until the very foundation of Ogdenburg Federal Penitentiary shook. And as the explosions grew closer and the prison erupted in the violence of panic, Don Anselmo Scubizi sat calmly on the edge of his bed to await salvation. Ogdenburg looked like Berlin after the war. The main walls were pulverized, collapsed into piles of rubble. The ruins of a downed helicopter sat like a squashed bug on the snow before the main entrance. Sirens blared, even as more men in orange slipped through the many holes in the walls.
We're late, little father. Looks like they started the prison break without us.
People in this country have no sense of decorum.
Looks like they used rockets and truck bombs to pierce the walls.
The Romans, I fear, are trying to rescue their emperor.
One of the black vans hadn't exploded. Remo squealed to a stop beside it. Behind the wheel was a man dressed in civilian attire. A dozen gold and silver crosses hung around his neck. For some reason, the General Mills logo was tattooed on the backs of his hands. He had missed reaching his target after being shot in the chest from a guard tower. Blood gurgled from between the man's whitening lips. Holy Pauli Pavula was breathing his last.
What the hell is this all about?
Don Scubisi, I had the spring... Don Scubisi.
Where is he?
Gone. Saw him get on the chopper with my own eyes. I did good by my Don.
His eyes sprang open. He was staring through the cracked windshield at something far distant.
Sure, I'll step into the light. But you silly rabbit, tricks are for... Oh, wait, those ain't ears, are they?
Pauli Pavula slumped over the steering wheel.
Damn it. Thanks to her, we missed out on the action. We never miss out on the action. I'm telling you, little father, those two are a curse.
Emperor Smith will not be pleased that the Roman lord eluded us, but he will be even less so if he learns that we have been filmed again.
Helicopters, a lot by the sounds of it, No doubt the press had heard about the mass escape at Ogdenburg and were racing to the scene.
Why can't my life ever be easy?
Mark Howard had endured the pain in his broken wrist for the whole flight back to Washington. He had had the bone set at Arlington Orthopedic Hospital before returning home. When he finally trudged through the door of his apartment, it was Friday afternoon. The digital answering machine on the stand inside the door registered one phone call. Mark pressed the message button, turning the volume up loud.
Hello, Mark? You there? If you're there, pick up. No? Oh, this is your president speaking. No, wait, scratch that. Got in trouble identifying myself on tape before. Anyway, I got an important offer I'd like to make you. You probably didn't know it, but I had you checked out these past few months. You got a real weird personality profile there, buddy. Anyway, I got a proposition for you that I think we should talk about in person. I got a car that'll come and pick you up at 10 tonight. You don't have to do anything but get in. I'll tell you what's what when you get here. I guess that's it. You still not there? I really hate these goddamn machines. Okay, see you tonight.
The estate of Don Hector Vincenzo was a well-guarded fortress nestled safely within gently sloping hills at the fringe of Naples, where the edge of the old city met the azure waters of the Tyrrhenian Sea. The Manhattan mafia leader was led through the cool, drafty house and out into a glass-enclosed patio that overlooked dormant vineyards. Don Vincenzo was sitting at a white wrought iron table. A glass of deep red wine sat at his elbow. Beside it was a cloth bag, knotted at the neck.
You have had a busy day, Anselmo.
Don Vincenzo did not look at the younger man, did not offer a seat. As the Camara leader stared out over his fields, Scubisi stood uncomfortably before him.
Everything went as you planned it, I assume?
Like clockwork. Helicopters did the damage at the prison, then took me to Canada. A jet was waiting for me there. That was the last thing that Saul Sweet set up for me before he was slaughtered. Before anyone knew what hit them, I was in the air over the Atlantic.
And so, you told your jet airplane to bring you to me.
I had nowhere else to go.
So, you come straight to me? Lead them to me, hmm?
He finally turned to the younger Don. His watery old eyes were flat.
Please, Don Vincenzo, my own people will not accept the wisdom of my decision to join with you. They will see it as an act of betrayal. I wasn't safe in prison. Some force unknown to me has destroyed all we built together. They would have come to me eventually. This I know. I had to flee from them and from my own people.
Would you serve me faithfully?
Yes, I promise, Don Hector. You have my word.
You are disloyal to your own blood. And you expect me to believe you will remain faithful to me?
Please.
You are Mafia, La Cosa Nostra. I am Camara. It is my blood, my soul. We were enemies before either of us was born, Anselmo. It is the way of things. Thanks to long ago fate, your people thrived in America. And because of that, your Mafia families ran the world for a time. But your power wanes. In time, it will be no more. But Camara will thrive after you are gone. You were weak after your imprisonment, Anselmo. I saw opportunity in that weakness. Rafael was not the simple money-making scheme I claimed. Nor was it your stepping stone to domination of the American market. It was designed specifically to weaken the Mafia. If Rafael was successful for a time, I reaped the benefits. If Rafael failed publicly, and such public failure always involves the authorities, Anselmo, it would be a black eye for the Mafia. Either way, I win. But I'm afraid there is no way for you to do so. I am sorry for this.
A subtle nod, missed by Don Scubisi. The American Mafia leader was about to plead for his life once more when it was suddenly and abruptly ended. The bullet hit Don Anselmo Scubisi in the back of the head. His forehead yawned open, and he sprawled lifeless to the cold patio. The Camara leader picked up the cloth bag from the table. Old fingers tugged open the string at the neck. Taking the bag by the end, he shook it a few times over the body of Don Scubizi. A fat white pigeon dropped onto the back of the dead mafia leader.
See that they are buried together.
Yes, Don Hector.
Another guard appeared. The two men dragged the body off the patio. After they were gone, another began hosing the small specks of Don Anselmo Scubizi's brains off the window panes. As the man worked, Don Vincenzo took a sip of wine. Sunlight sparkled off the glass. It was time to start thinking about tomorrow.
Hey, Ma.
There was some men come looking for you.
Johnny's hand froze on the doorknob.
What men?
What do I know what men? Men!
She didn't turn to her son. At the stove, she continued to use a big wooden spoon to stir the cauldron of tomato sauce that bubbled on the back burner.
These men, were they young, old, what?
What are you doing leaving the door open? It's the middle of January.
Ma!
What's the matter with you, Johnny? You in trouble again?
No, Ma, no trouble.
You never told me. Where'd you get that big bruise on your forehead?
Ma, I need to know about the men.
They come about an hour ago. One was young and the other was real old. He was some kind of Chinaman. He was real nice, you know, polite.
Oh, God.
You know, you and them slobs you hang around with could learn a thing or two about being polite from them Chinese.
Johnny didn't hear. He flew out the kitchen door, grabbing up his mother's car keys from the hook on the wall. He dove into her car, twisting the key violently in the ignition. The garage door split into a dozen neat panels as he plowed through it. The wood was flying into snowbanks on either side of the driveway as he slid out into the road. He hadn't gotten as far as the stop sign three houses down when he heard something that froze his heart.
Take your first left.
The familiar voice came from the back seat. He had heard it first in East Africa 3 months ago. Again on the plane in Boston earlier this week. His frightened gaze strayed to the rearview mirror. It was him, along with the old man from the Boston Refair office. Dead eyes stared through to Johnny's very soul. He was naked and alone on Judgment Day.
Please.
We're beyond that. Drive.
There was nothing else he could do. Johnny did as he was told. By the time they reached the empty parking lot behind the abandoned Newark tenement, he had told them where they could find Mikey Skunks Falcone and the third man who'd helped burn Castle Shinanju to the ground.
We got a deal!
You don't have anything we want.
Ah!
Save one thing.
Ah!
As Johnny wept in fear, Remo flipped him upside down. He held the big man by one ankle, dangling him at arm's length above the ground. The master of Shinanju bent low. Johnny held his breath as the same deadly nails that had decapitated Louis de Grotti moved toward him. Chun's hand slipped past Johnny's frightened, upended face. He felt a tug at his hair, not even very hard.
What are you doing?
Chun twirled a single lock of greasy hair between two fingers. His fingertips rolled faster and faster until they became a barely visible blur. A tiny curl of smoke rose into the air. Johnny caught a whiff as it rose past his nose. A look of upside-down horror appeared on his reddening face.
No!
Fire climbed up his clothes. His jacket and trousers ignited rapidly. The sickly sweet smell of barbecued flesh filled the cold air. Eventually, when Johnny finally stopped screaming, and the flames were too much for even Remo to bear, he tossed the burning corpse into a nearby dumpster. The trash in the metal container flamed to life. Remo and Chun didn't give him another look. The President of the United States sat in his bathrobe in the Lincoln bedroom. He held the red phone in his hand now as he tried to explain everything away.
I didn't mean for it to go bad like this, Smith. She just kind of makes things happen, you know?
No, I do not know, Mr. President. As for your wife's knowledge of our existence, that is as much my fault as it is your own. She inserted herself into enough crises in the past that I should have dealt with her long before this.
Yeah, it really is your fault more than it is mine.
I did not say that, Mr. President, and you cannot deny culpability in this matter.
You really made her forget about you fellas?
Yes. Not that her knowledge of us was as extensive as yours, but she knew enough to make her a security risk. Obviously.
Yeah, it was really awful how she made me tell her where your guys would be. But you've met her. You can understand how I didn't have a choice.
No, sir, I do not understand. You allowed your wife to manipulate you into placing my men at risk, all for some half-baked scheme that had no hope of succeeding. You had a choice. You could have refused.
Maybe you haven't met her after all. She's taken me down this same road a million times, from universal health care to those Puerto Rican terrorists. What she wants, she gets.
Before we end this conversation, which, Mr. President, will be our last, I need to ask a few questions. First, are the MIR revolutionaries associated in any way with Rafair?
No, I asked you to check Rafair out before my wife called me about you.
So it was you personally who supplied the whereabouts of my men to your wife, and she in turn instructed the terrorists. There were no go-betweens.
Yeah, each time her boys failed, she called me again, meaner than the last time. By the end, she was threatening to stay in New York, not even come down here for the inauguration tomorrow.
Very well, sir. This ends your contact with this agency. Tonight, you will brief your successor about us, and later in the evening, while you sleep, my men will visit you and perform the same procedure they have already performed on your wife. You will forget forever the existence of this agency and its personnel. Goodbye, Mr. President.
Wait, Smith?
Yes, sir?
I wasn't so bad, was I? I mean, this stuff at the end wasn't too great, but I was okay otherwise, right?
All his life, he had always sought approval. He listened expectantly now for an answer.
Your actions have threatened us with exposure and put at risk the lives of my two operatives, men to whom this nation owes a debt untold for 3 decades of tireless, thankless service.
I see.
Yes, Mr. President, you were bad. You were very, very bad.
In his Falcroft office, Smith replaced the phone with an authoritative click. Face pinched, he slid the drawer shut.
Guess suck-up time is over.
Remo was sitting cross-legged on the floor, the master of Shinanju at his side.
Tomorrow at noon, we begin with a clean slate. Although we must temper that fact with the knowledge that this president will doubtless not speak kindly of us when he briefs his successor tonight.
One president's pretty much the same as the next one to me. This guy was no great shakes. But I've seen the new president, so I'm not getting my hopes up. I did like that part, though, when you played us up for our thankless service. That'll come in handy at contract time, I'm sure.
From the corner of his eye, he looked over at the master of Shinanju. Chun sat rigid on the worn carpet, eyes straight ahead. His teacher's silent sadness brushed Remo's heart.
While you were tracking down the 3 men who destroyed your home, I continued my search for Anselmo Scubizi. He took a jet from Canada to parts unknown. No flight plan was registered. I can't locate a pilot, so he cannot be traced for questioning. For all intents and purposes, Anselmo Scubizi has vanished without a trace.
And lives to bug us some other day. If it wasn't for Washington's answer to Evita Peron and her San Juan ski patrol, we would have had him, Smitty.
Yes. But let us view this with some optimism. Scubizi's plan was a failure. The Securities and Exchange Commission is now looking into Rafair. The stock has collapsed. Given all this, it is likely that Anselmo Scubizi's Kamara benefactor is not pleased with him. Perhaps our work has been done for us.
I'm not too hot on leaps of faith, Smitty, and I remember a time when you weren't either.
You will find, Remo, that the world changes as you age.
Well, I'll just have to stop aging.
Well, I should inform the two of you that I have been considering suspending operations.
What?
Remo glanced at the master of Shinanju. This had gotten the old Korean's attention.
The thought has been with me for some time. The posting has always been demanding, even in my younger years. And while you and Chun remained more than consistent in your abilities throughout our association, clearly I have not.
You are in but the second blush of life, O Emperor. Do not trouble yourself with such vexing thoughts until you have reached 100.
Realistically, that is not an option. And even if I were to stay on very much longer, I'm not certain that I'm equipped to understand this new age.
There's no new age, Smitty. It's always just the same crummy old one, with a new coat of paint and a bigger price tag.
I disagree, Remo. In my day, ordinary Americans would not have invested money in organized crime. A project like Rafair would never have been seriously considered by the Mafia. Such things are products of a different America. One which I'm becoming less able to comprehend.
Bull dookie.
Ow!
A sudden pinch on his thigh served as a warning from his teacher. With a silencing look, Chun withdrew his tapered nails.
You will retire?
Smith thought of the poison pill in his vest pocket.
In the manner of speaking?
Before you leave on this sunny autumn journey, Smith the Generous, Sinanju craves a boon.
If it is within my power to give it.
Please, be kind enough to tell the new occupant of the Eagle Throne that which you just told his lard-bellied predecessor.
I knew you were listening.
Remo had to slap a hand over his leg to avoid another pinch.
The idiot is going to commit suicide. Before he kills himself, he could at least put in a good word for us.
He's got a good point, Smitty.
Your humble servants would be eternally grateful.
There was no rancor visible on Smith's tired face. As he nodded, he stood.
I will see what I can do.
1,000 thank yous, Emperor Smith. Do not play us up too much, however. After all, we do not wish to appear desperate.
Smith came around his desk, his battered leather briefcase at his side.
Where are you going, Smitty? I thought you didn't have to be back in your coffin until sunrise.
Home. And the two of you should be leaving, too. You have a plane to catch for Washington. I would appreciate it if you first disposed of the MIR agent you brought here. He is in the security wing.
Can do.
When you leave, be certain to lock this room. Good night.
With that, Smith left the office.
Great. More planes. If there's any smuggled boomboxes on this flight, I'm tossing them through a jet engine.
Unless they are playing the lovely Wylander.
Whoa! You told me you were giving up country music!
Chun gave him a look generally reserved for dim children and mental defectives.
Country music? Yes. Oxygen? No.
And as his pupil's face fell, the master of Shenanju padded silently from the shadowy office. At the White House, Mark Howard was ushered up to the Lincoln bedroom. The president was waiting for him at the door. No longer capable of being surprised by anything, Mark didn't even blink when he saw the second man who was in the room. The president-elect sat on the edge of the bed across the room. An old-fashioned phone was at the future president's feet. It was fire engine red.
Hello, Mark. I'm sure you two haven't met.
No, sir, Mr. President. How do you do, Mr. President-elect?
The man who would become president the following day at noon didn't seem interested in Mark in the least. He was studying the phone at his feet, the deep lines of his forehead creased down the middle.
We were just having a little talk before you showed up. It's a matter that, well, that concerns you now.
He glanced at the president-elect. The other man's face was somber. When he turned back to Mark, the chief executive took a deep breath.
Mark, let me tell you about a little something called cure.
The Destroyer, Syndication Rights, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2001, Warren Murphy. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Jeff Baker, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Dylan Lynch, Tim Getman, Tim Carlin, Margie Tompros, Colleen Delaney, Joe Brack, Michael John Casey, and Nanette Savard. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan and Nathaniel Perry. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Brian Patton. The Destroyer theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Brian Patton and Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Jimmy Payne. If you enjoyed The Destroyer, be sure to look for our other exciting titles. Available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. And go to the glorious house of Shinunju at www.warrenmurphy.com. Keep listening for exciting previews after these announcements.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
In those days, there were heroes and villains, and darkness walked the earth. There were dragons to be slain, captured princesses to be saved, and mighty deeds to be accomplished by knights in shining armor.
Go forth and slay a dragon, my son.
Sounds so easy when you say it. Sounds even easier when those bloody minstrels sing about it.
Robert.
We're being watched, right?
Right.
What do you want from me?
I'm looking for a dragon.
To start with, you've got to pass clean through the Darkwood and out the other side. And there's damn few have done that and live to tell it. Deep in the Darkwood, something is stirring. Something awful.
I can take care of myself.
Hideous monster! I, Prince Rupert of the Forest Kingdom, do hereby challenge ye! Come forth and fight!
You're a prince, you said?
Yes.
Do you by any chance rescue princesses? I've got one here, and she's driving me crazy.
You're holding a princess captive?
Shh! Keep your voice down. She'll hear you. I'm not holding her captive. I'll be glad to see the back of her.
What's wrong with her?
Dragon!
That's what's wrong with her.
Hello, Prince...
Oh, my hero! You've come to rescue me!
Well, that's part...
I knew you'd come!
Well, yes. Glad to be of service.
Now get on with it.
Get on with what?
With killing the dragon, of course. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Ah, well, the dragon and I have talked it over, and I'm going to take him back to my castle alive. And you too, of course. Princess Julia, you have two choices. Come back to my castle with me and the dragon, or stay here on your own.
You can't leave me here!
Watch me.
You're the worst prince ever!
Well, I see you've already got something in common with my father.
Prince Rupert? Princess Julia? Approach the throne. Rupert, can't you do anything right?
Not much. Sorry I couldn't oblige you by getting killed during the quest.
Your Majesty, we do have a serious problem to discuss. Time is running out, Your Majesty. We've already lost three of the outlying villages to the demons, and every day more of the forest falls under the shadow of the Long Night. Demons run ahead of the Darkwood, slaughtering all in their path. We must make a stand against the darkness, while we still can.
Once in a blue moon, magic is loosed in the world. Wild magic, to create or destroy, strong enough to reshape reality itself on the night the blue moon is full. We have 7 months until that night. 7 months in which to find an answer to the darkness. If we fail, the Darkwood will spread over all that is. Civilization will fall. The long night will have no ending. And the world will belong to the demons. Prince Rupert, you must journey to the Dark Tower and there summon the High Warlock.
And the High Warlock's our only hope against the Darkwood?
Looks like it.
Then we're in deep trouble.
It's a hard, bloody journey to the Dark Tower, my friends. And you'll be facing the worst odds of your career. Most of you won't be coming back. If we make it, they'll sing songs about us forever.
Everybody, run! Now!
Rupert, what in the world did... We're not going to make it outside, sire. We have to stand and fight.
It'll kill us!
If you've a better idea, I'm open to suggestions.
Even as we speak, my champion and my younger son, Prince Rupert, are on their way to summon the High Warlock, that he may return to the Forest Land and set his sorceries against the darkness.
You'd bring him back? After what he did?
Desperate situations call for desperate remedies. I have therefore decided also to reopen the old armory and draw the katana from its scabbard.
The Sword of Compulsion has been forbidden to your Majesty's line for over 4 centuries.
The situation has changed since then.
A king rules by the consent of his people, not because he has a magic sword that compels their obedience. Do you think the barons will stand idly by while you employ such power?
Many tales are told of that time. Tales of steadfast bravery and derring-do.
Unicorn, You'd better find a tree to hide behind and stay clear of the fight. I don't want you getting hurt.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you, Rupert!
Don't just stand there. Get him, lads!
He's got a sword, boss.
A big sword.
And look at those scars on his face. And there was all that dried blood on his armor. He must have slaughtered hundreds of people.
Stop messing about and kill the traveler!
You want him dead, you kill him!
This is not one of those tales.
At least get his horse.
Horse! I'm a unicorn!
Horse, unicorn, what's the difference?
I'll be afraid later when there's time. Oh, I'll line up the crepes for me, and I'll skewer the lot of them. I'll show them a shish kebab they won't forget in a hurry.
Did you really think you could threaten me in my own court and get away with it? You're a fool, Sir Bedivere, and I do not suffer fools gladly. Bow your head to me or lose it.
You dare laugh? We're running out of time. There's a blue moon rising.
The dark will not take me this night!
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blue Moon Rising, Part 1.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.